The next case is number 024331, Hollow Industries against Center Point. Mr. Wolf.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the court, I'm Neil Wolf, and I am representing the debtor appellant, Halo Industries, Inc. Please, the court, there are really seven reasons why the decision of the district court should be reversed here, and why the position that has been taken by CenterPoint Properties should be rejected by this court. Number one, it is simply contrary, the district court opinion or decision is contrary to law in this circuit, the Handy Andy case.
Well, you would admit that there are at least some factual differences between Handy Andy and your case, because Handy Andy deals with obligations that accrued before the petition, whereas yours is at the other end of the spectrum, you know, things that you believe yourself to be free from because they're post-rejection, right?
Your Honor, if you look at the lower court decisions in Handy Andy, as we point out in our brief, you'll note that Handy Andy actually dealt with tax obligations that accrued not only in the pre-petition period, but dealt with tax obligations that arguably accrued in the post-rejection period.
Right, but in terms of the binding law, what binds this court is what this court held in Handy Andy, and if there's something that's not discussed, I would say at best, you know, it might be an extension. I'm just trying to be clear about this, because we have the Sixth Circuit case in Koenig, which you're asking us to conflict with. If we are already 100% down that road or 80% down that road, that makes a difference to us procedurally as well as, you know, we respect the decisions of our sister circuits.
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor, I'm not sure whether it's 100 or 80%, but I would suggest that the very, very clear language of this court's decision in Handy Andy would exclude both the pre-petition and the post rejection taxes. I think we could agree as to that. And I don't think that's dictum. I believe that that is the opinion of the court in that case. Now, albeit it applies to taxes,
right,
which are treated in that case as additional rent. But I think that the court is very, very clear in suggesting pre-petition, post-rejection expenses should not be treated as administrative and paid currently during the course of the bankruptcy case.
So you essentially read Handy Andy as kind of a global adoption of an accrual approach as opposed to a billing approach. And if it's that, then perhaps it goes as far as you're saying. But if it's much more specific to the tax context and the sunk cost analysis, it may not.
I would read it that way, and I don't understand, and nobody has persuaded me, Your Honor, notwithstanding the briefing at multiple levels here, that there's anything about taxes that distinguishes them in this context from rent. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, we have a situation, I believe, where they're more alike than different, and to treat them differently would be to essentially work a windfall in favor of one party or another that's utterly antithetical to bankruptcy policy, to common sense, to justice, frankly.
That all may be true, but I think the other thing that the lower courts were concerned with was just the language of the bankruptcy code, 365D3. Why wasn't it an obligation of the debtor as of November 1st to pay the November rent here? And if the trustee shall timely perform all the obligations, then that means this gigantic rental payment was due on November 1st.
Your Honor, perhaps we disagree on this point. I don't know if we disagree on this point, but I don't believe that that language is nearly as clear as the Canaan courts perhaps thought it was. You know, I think it begs the question to say that you'll timely perform an obligation on the first of the month. The question is, what is that obligation? And I think you have to read that obligation in terms of legislative history, context, pre-amendment law, and there's no indication that this was intended in any respect to amend pre-amendment law as it applied to proration versus, you know, billing date. And I think the great weight of authority before this was adopted in 1994 was in favor of a proration or accrual type approach. There's no suggestion in the legislative history that Congress intended to amend that. I don't believe there is any. And indeed, the suggestion is quite the contrary. The suggestion is that Congress was attempting to address two specific problems. One problem was a kind of a involuntary basis under which landlords were forced to provide services, including the provision of space, to tenants post-petition in bankruptcy cases. And the second problem was the basis or the quantification of rent, because on a pre-amendment basis, there had been an attempt by debtors, largely successful, to argue that the contract rate ought not apply, that the rent ought to be determined based upon the current market base, what was reasonable and necessary at that time. In Senator Hatch, who really provides about the only legislative history we have on this point, is very, very explicit in saying we're trying to fix that. Well, if you apply the center point approach to this particular problem, you don't fix that. Indeed, quite the opposite can occur. You might have a situation, Your Honor, where, say, the first of the month rent becomes due under the terms of the lease. The debtor files on the second of the month. Debtor doesn't pay rent on the first of the month, knowing that it's going to file on the second day of the month. Under the center point argument, they would be compelled to provide the balance of that month, say 29 days worth of use and occupancy of the premises on a virtually rent-free basis.
On a pre-petition basis,
on
right.
A pre-petition basis. Mm-hmm. And I see that I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, so thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. We'll hear now from Mr. Fisher.
May it please the Court, I'm Mark Fisher, and I'm speaking here on behalf of CenterPoint Properties Trust. I believe that this Court should not rewrite the lease terms, where the lease terms required advance payment of rent for a monthly occupancy period.
But that is a strict billing approach, because nobody's disputing that the proration itself would occur based on the rental provision in the lease. Nobody's saying you're going to sit there and figure out what the real value of this property was for 4 days. You take the base of the monthly rental, you multiply it times the correct number of days, and so in other words, in that sense, you would be sticking with the lease just on an accrual basis.
Judge, I believe that what Congress did was to say you've got to look at the lease. And what these parties did is they agreed before the bankruptcy that you have to buy your occupancy in month-long chunks.
But if you don't look at the lease, according to our handy-andy decision, if it says something about payment of taxes...
Taxes are different, Judge. I heard learning counsel that they weren't. If you look at handy-andy, taxes being billed in arrears, it's clear that, like death and taxes, they're going to be owed for a prior period. You know what period that is.
But the parties can allocate that burden as they wish under a lease. The landlord could be responsible for them and adjust the rent accordingly. I don't know why, if we're going to agree that provision of a lease that allocates the responsibility to pay taxes as between the landlord and the tenant is always handled on an accrual basis, that other provisions of a lease are somehow more sacrosanct.
Judge, I argued the Montgomery Ward case for CenterPoint, and I would disagree with you on that, but I don't think that ruling in handy-andy has any bearing here. Pre-petition taxes, as the court pointed out, are sunk costs, and that's very different from a current occupancy charge. That's what the bankruptcy specialists down in the lower courts here have held, not only in this
court. Reluctantly, I would say. They think it's very much against the bankruptcy
policy. But bankruptcy judges want to split the baby. That's what they do. This court is here to make law. And I believe that what this court ought to do here is to stick with, if you decide to, the handy-andy rationale, because if this lease were terminated prior to bankruptcy, there would not be any obligation to pay this rent, contrary to the taxes. If this lease were terminated and there was a new tenant who stepped up on the next day, the 4th of November, he would be paying the balance of November. Those were the two tests in handy-andy as to whether there's a sunk cost. It's quite clear.
So you'd get double payment then for November?
You
think you're going to get the full payment on the 1st from HALO, and then you're going to get November 4 through 30 from your hypothetical new tenant.
I'm talking about a hypothetical test that this court imposed. If it turns out that people can make money on a lease, I think that's fine. I think that the problem is...
So then your answer is yes.
Yes,
landlords could re-let the property immediately and collect double rent.
Yes. I can tell you, Your Honor, that didn't happen here. This building sat idle for many months until it was sold. So the question is, when you're dealing with a 267,000 square foot building as opposed to a hotel room, which is what they want to liken this to, where people say, I'm going to rent this room by the day, that's not what the parties agreed to. And what Congress said is, as opposed to the administrative claim where you do have a daily accrual of rent, what Congress said and what this statute said is, in an automatically executing fashion, you've got to pay your bills when they come due under the lease for rent. And that's what's in the crosshairs of Senator Hatch's remarks. We quote him on our brief. The first thing he says is, the evil here is not paying the rent in this period of time.
What's the purpose of the 30-day period that the bankruptcy court requires before the rejection takes effect? I mean, it seems to me that is notice to the landlord that there's a certain time when the property is going to be back in the landlord's control again.
It's something I argued against in the Delaware court, because I did not want to see a situation where they would be a holdover tenant, which is what they did. They could have picked, by giving a 30-day notice, a period that expired on the 31st of October, because they couldn't be out of there, I presume. They waited around until we giving the mid-month notice, so it came due mid-month. They bought, under the party's lease, another month of occupancy, whether they used it or not.
But couldn't it work in the other direction an accrual approach sometimes would help landlords to prevent the kind of gamesmanship that would occur if you vacated on the 31st of October, and sometimes it might, quote-unquote, help the bankrupt estate in a situation like this, but systematically, wouldn't it be a fairly neutral way of handling things?
It is, and it's already in the code, Judge, in the administrative expense priority, where the lower courts get followed up, is where they want to try to do fairness, and right now they have it. The estate owes an obligation to pay administrative expenses for the actual and necessary expense of administration. So in that instance, where I think you pointed out to opposing counsel here, the rent was due pre-petition, and then there's this period of time, they're going to get an administrative claim. Prima facie, it's the lease rent. But in my instance, what this court should not do is to try to drag the courts into all these decisions. If you set a rule, the parties can negotiate their deal when they cut their rent with that rule in mind.
But you know, I don't disagree with your statement as a general proposition, but it sounds to me like you're really telling us what we should do is follow those circuits that have an across-the-board billing rule approach. Some circuits, for exactly that reason, have done that, and we didn't in Handy Andy.
Judge, I don't think that what you decided in Handy Andy, although it would not have been my decision, is unfair. To say that the pass-throughs are things that have to be attributed to the occupancy period, I think is a fair result. Rent is very clear, and the reasons are, another difference is, the pass-throughs are clearly from a different billing cycle, whereas the rent, you know what it is. The pass-throughs are
What about the case, I forget the name of it, the case where the rent was payable annually and the rejection occurs 3 months
that's
in?
The Swanton case.
Yeah.
Judge, very little analysis in that case, and quite frankly, from my point of view, you shouldn't set a rule based on weird cases. Whenever you have a rent in the marketplace that's a year long, there's something unusual going on there. And the parties could have bargained. If they know what the rule is for monthly installments, maybe it's because it's an ag lease and the crop comes in, or it's a de minimis payment so that you don't want to deal with the money every month. But that's not the garden variety lease that Congress wanted to protect here. Pay me every month. The difference is, this is an award-winning, custom-designed, single-tenant office building that was built for them, to their spec by Helmut Jahn. So, what are we talking about here? The rent's big here because they got, that occupancy is worth a lot of money.
Getting back to the question of the double rent collection, given the focus of the bankruptcy code on protecting debtors from unnecessary costs that undermine bankruptcy reorganization, shouldn't we read the statute to discourage this potential kind of windfall to landlords?
Judge, I don't believe that the windfall in the ordinary course, there's, to me, no, in my experience as a landlord's lawyer, you don't get a windfall. That building is going to be empty for a heck of a long time. And certainly what we're talking about here is a mid-month. Getting a few days here or there is not going to make a difference. What I think this court has to do is to look at what Congress said in the statute. And what they decided to do here, Judge, was not to fix every possible problem that could occur in a landlord-tenant situation. What they said is, you have to pay the monthly rent when it comes due. These other issues, whether in one instance there is someone is fortuitous enough to have a tenant waiting in the wings, if there are many other instances where the tenant, the debtor, makes a big pile of money when they sell the rights to assume and assign leases, and now that lease is underwater, and they'll put a new tenant in there, and they'll make the margin between the current rent and what the market rent is. Is that a windfall for the debtor? Well, maybe it is, but it's not something that deals under Section 365 of the Bankruptcy Code. What we're dealing with here is some problems, and that is the problem of paying your rent if it comes due automatically. That's what Congress intended. And I believe it's very, very clear from the legislative history. It's very, very clear from the statute, and quite frankly, Handy Andy and a decision in this case in favor of CenterPoint can exist side by side. Just as the Comdisco, Judge Barlant ruled, just as in a slightly different context, the courts here, or the judge in UIL, Judge Weedoff, said is the case, and similarly, the bankruptcy judge Doyle in the district court here, that this court should distinguish the sunk cost of pass-throughs that occurred pre-petition from the occupancy charges here. And I believe if you recognize that distinction, which these other judges have, there is no need to disturb Handy Andy. We can leave that for another day. I do believe that the only circuit court is pretty persuasive in dealing with this, and for that reason, noting my time has expired, I would ask that you affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you.
Mr. Wolf, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. It would seem that Mr. Fisher would ask you, though he refused to answer your question with respect to what about rent that is payable, you know, 1 year in advance on the first day of the year. Never really answered that, except to say, Your Honors, we shouldn't custom design cases for weird situations, or we shouldn't customize Seventh Circuit opinions to cover weird situations. But again and again, he asked you to customize your opinion in this case to talk about his situation, which is a situation where we did have a Helmut Jahn designed building, which was custom designed, as it were, for a particular tenant. The fact of the matter is, he is asking for a circumstance here that could work a very, very substantial windfall in favor of most commercial and business landlords.
Well, couldn't HALO have avoided this problem by rejection of the lease on the 30th? And doesn't that fact distinguish this case from Handy Andy?
Your Honor, HALO could have conceivably rejected on the 30th, but HALO did not reject on the 30th because
Halo is operating in a different legal environment, as it were, than the legal environment that it stands before you today in. The Halo case was pending in the District of Delaware at that time. At that time, pretty settled Delaware law, including the district court, were supporting an accrual approach. The Montgomery Ward decision, which changed the landscape in the Third Circuit, did not come down until after Halo had issued its 30-day notice. Believe it or not, it came down 1 week later. And so we felt we were on very solid ground because we had all these cases coming out of both the Third Circuit and also the Second Circuit, Your Honor, not a Second Circuit opinion, but lower court cases within the Second Circuit that said an accrual and proration approach would apply. And indeed, that was the majority view. That was, and I believe Your Honor recognized that as the majority view in the lower court, in the district court decision, in Handy Andy. So, with 2020 hindsight, perhaps, we would like to have changed it, but we were looking for space at the time. We hadn't signed a lease with a new tenant, with a new landlord. We had to move a $500 million business at the time, and so the notice went out just as quickly as we signed a lease with a new landlord into which we could move the step. Thank you very much, Ron.
My thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The last case of the day, 03-1511, the United States against Rosa Cameron, has been submitted to the court on briefs, and therefore oral argument will not be heard today in that case. Having concluded the call of the day, the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.